Mother Nature mad at somebody? Raining crazy, LOL.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at @RedRock_Bball. The Red Rock Dynasty rookie drafts are winding down. The new Red Rock Dynasty leagues are ramping up, so lots of action happening there in the Dynasty leagues. I hope you guys are enjoying those drafts as they're going along and cranking out through the month of August. We had a little bit of news happen in the last 24 hours. I'm going to get to that in today's show and also look at players who had fairly significant changes in their production after the All-Star break, whether that was in a positive manner or in a negative manner, what the reasons behind those changes were, and how much of that is applicable to this coming season. Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it.
All right, that is a really, really good idea. Let's start with what the news is. A couple of signings. James Nunnally went to the Wolves. He's going to be used in exactly zero games by Tom Thibodeau, so very little impact there. Shelvin Mack, probably a little bit more interesting, going to the Memphis Grizzlies. At the way it currently stood is they were looking at Andy Harrison or Kobe Simmons as their backup point guard. I would imagine Mack can move into that role. There's still a lot of guys there in that guard position. There's Conley, there's Mack now, there's Andy Harrison, there's Wayne Selden, there's Dylan Brooks, there's Marshawn Brooks. Kobe Simmons there's a whole bunch of guys who can get minutes. And apart from Conley, it's a little bit unclear as to how that rotation's going to work. We saw JB Bickerstaff really like Andy Harrison last season, played him at the one and played him at the two. Wayne Selden was injured for most of last season. Dylan Brooks got a ton of minutes, but a lot of those at the three, and now Kyle Anderson is playing there, so perhaps he's in a bit of a squeeze. Marshawn Brooks came out and shot about 124% from three in his games at the end of the season, so he's another guy in the mix. So that shooting guard position for Memphis is very much up in the air, and now with Mack coming in to play those backup point guard minutes, it pushes another name in that mix with Andy Harrison moving across to the two. So somebody's going to miss out, whether that's Marshawn, whether that's Selden, whether that is Harrison. We don't know at this point, but there's quite a few names there in that guard mix. Not that any of them are really great, and Mack is probably an upgrade on Harrison as a backup point guard, but it just muddies the waters, especially at that shooting guard position. The other bit of news that went down is DRC Zaire Smith suffered a Jones fracture in his foot. If you remember, a Jones fracture is the injury that Kevin Durant has had, Ben Simmons has had. It's a fracture in the outside of the foot near the pinky toe. It's about 8 weeks probably to return to action, but as we've seen in Simmons and Durant's case, it does generally take longer than that. So I would be expecting Smith to miss the beginning of this season, and the Sixers don't 100% need him. It's going to be all development for DRC this season anyway, so I think they're going to be a little bit more conservative. We've seen their history of Nerlens Noel, Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Markel Fultz of being really conservative. Of course, they're in a different position now than what they were then. They want to win, and they want to win now. But Smith's not necessarily going to be a big contributor there. You've got JJ Redick, you've got Markel Fultz, you've got Furkan Korkmaz there as well, who probably takes some of those minutes. Baby Nick Wilson Chandler in the mix at the three. So Smithy, I think, will probably come back late November, early December, assuming there's no complications to this injury, but he's not going to be an every night part of the rotation. I imagine that Korkmaz will solidify himself in that 10th spot in the rotation, most likely. And Smith will play spot minutes there. Probably also gives a little bit of a boost to TJ McConnell, who could potentially have lost some minutes if they were going to play Smith. But now, with this injury taking away his training camp, his preseason, it's going to slow his development. He's probably going to look shaky this season. That was always a chance anyway. You know, I'm really high on Smith and I think he's got massive dynasty upside, but it is going to take time, and this even pushes it further into the future, but it also opens up a significant buy low window for someone like Zaire. In those dynasty formats, someone who knows there's a chance you don't get a contribution from him at all this year, or at the very best case scenario, you get limited contribution and then it slows that development. But 3 to 4 years time, we could be looking at a top 60, top 50 type of dynasty fantasy producer if all things go according to plan. But it does open up a pretty significant buy low window for DRC. Let's get into what the bulk of this program is going to be about, and that's talking about players who saw significant changes in their overall fantasy ranks after the All-Star break as opposed to what they were at before the All-Star break. I've got a list of guys here, of guys who got better, a list of guys who got worse as well. We'll go through them individually and talk about what the big reason for those changes were. The first one of those guys, as you can see on that list there, is Trey Burke, who was the 299th ranked player before the All-Star break, but jumped up to the 102nd guy after the break. That's obviously a big, big rise in rankings, and that's because he started getting that starting point guard role in New York. Now, we don't know exactly what David Fizdale is going to do. Will he run Burke? Will he run Frankie Ntilikina? Will he run Emmanuel Mudiay there? Will he run Ntilikina and Burke together? But what we saw from Trey Burke was an outstanding shooting effort from two-point range, something which I think is highly unsustainable. But he also was fairly poor from his three-point shooting, which is something that could go up. So I would expect his overall efficiency, though, to dip based on what we saw last season. And I don't think that ranking of 102 post-All-Star is necessarily a guarantee for this year. We don't know if the minutes are coming. We don't know what the role is going to be. But he's someone that you should be looking at towards the end of the draft, because if they do give him that 27, 28 minute role, he can produce enough to be a valuable guy. Josh the Hitman Hart, 253rd before the All-Star, 70th after. That is a huge leap there, obviously right into standard league calculations, but we have to remember a couple of things. The Lakers were dealing with significant injuries. Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball were all out in that post-All-Star break period. Hart was playing at the two with KCP moving up to the three. He was playing some point guard minutes, and he looked really, really good. Now, of course, Lonzo's back. Rajon Rondo's there. LeBron James there. Ingram's back healthy. Kuzma's around. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope was brought back to the team. So it's going to be unlikely that he can be that 70th ranked player again this season. But as I have maintained plenty of times on this show, I think that Hart has got a real chance to unseat KCP as the starting shooting guard. But even if he does, that doesn't mean 34 minutes a night. It probably means 29, 28, 27 as KCP plays some of those other minutes. Now, of course, if they do go really small and push LeBron to center, you've got Ingram at the four, then minutes open at the three. But of course, Kyle Kuzma can then shift into the four and keep Ingram at the three and still have that issue there at the two. And I'm roaming, including Lance Stephenson, who shouldn't be in the rotation, but most likely will be, unfortunately. So while Hart was good, and I do think he's going to be a top 100 player, probably next season, no, sorry, not the 18-19 season, the 19-20 season, there's a few things that do put a limit on what he can do for this coming year. Mo Harkless, he jumped up 179 spots to be the 76th ranked player post-All-Star break. He battled some injuries early in the season. He was completely disengaged and ended up only playing 21 minutes per night for the season. He was out of the rotation at times as well under Terry Stotts, but did come home really strongly in that second half of the season. And I think that he is a real chance to put up some significant numbers for this coming season. Anyway, a guy that can hit a three, can get a steal, can get a block per game as well, that elusive triple one. His shooting has improved as well. He's been banging his threes in at a pretty high rate, and I think he's probably going to be, you know, close to a top 150 guy for this coming season. Part of the reason he was so highly ranked in that post-All-Star break period was the fact that he was hitting 56% of his shots, which is obviously a very high level and something that I don't think we should be expecting to continue on for this coming season. But it is important to pay attention to how well Harkless did play. Actually, he shot 60% from the field. That's a nonsense number. 55% from three. It was only 12 games, but it was 25 minutes per game. Just shows you how few minutes he played earlier on in the season. Before I go back to the rest of this list, I do want to mention something, how good Anthony Davis was in that second half of the season, post-All-Star without DeMarcus Cousins. The difference between the number one and number two player post-All-Star break on a per-game basis, which was Anthony Davis down to Steph Curry, the difference in their overall Z-score was the equivalence of the difference between the number two-ranked player, Steph Curry, and the number 17-ranked player, LaMarcus Aldridge. Now, that is a staggering, staggering amount. Just that gap there, it's, you know, 16 players worth of value between just number one and number two. He was that far ahead of everybody, and that enabled him to catch Harden to be the number one guy by the end of the season, where Harden had that position for the entirety of the year. The next guy I want to talk about here on this list of guys taking a big rise post-All-Star was Joshy Jackson of the Phoenix Suns. He moved right into standard league calculations with the 120th ranked value in that time, played 31 minutes a night and scored 19 points and did it efficiently, which was important. 28 usage, 44 from the field, true shooting of 50, which was much better than what he did during the season. Still couldn't hit threes. But we have to remember Devin Booker was out. TJ Warren was out. He was operating in a much different environment than what he'll operate in this season. You've got to welcome back Warren. You've got to welcome back Booker. You've got to introduce Trevor Ariza, McCall Bridges, and DeAndre Ayton into that mix. And with how shit he was in Summer League, I'm not really sure where Joshy is going to sit in terms of rotation play. Will he get 31 minutes a night? Will he be able to get 28 usage? I can almost strike that off the record straight away. He's not going to get that level of usage. Will they start him? We don't even know. That might be TJ Warren in that spot. It might be McCall Bridges. And I wouldn't be shocked if Bridges overtakes Jackson at some point this season. So don't get overly excited by what Joshy did at the end of the last season. He did improve, but he was also in a much different situation than what he is going to be in this season. The next guy on the list probably surprises you. It's Nerlens Noel, who had a 158 spot rise from 266 to 108, came back from that thumb injury and played 12 games and only 21 minutes a night post All-Star. But in that time, he averaged 5 points, 8 rebounds, but almost 2 steals, a block a game, and went 52% from the field. Of course, he moves to Oklahoma City now to be the backup to Steven Adams. While I don't think it'll be the case, I wouldn't rule it out that he does play some power forward, especially with Jeremy Grant and Patrick Patterson being your only options there. Although, I would like to see the Thunder go to an Andre Robertson at the 4 lineup and put Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot in at the 2. Not sure that's necessarily going to happen, but Noel will probably find it hard to get to 20 minutes, but even in 18 minutes per night, his ability to get steals, to be a high field goal percentage guy, to get blocks, and he only had one block per game post All-Star when he's a guy that could get you 1.5 to 1.6 even in 20 minutes, he could have value there. So if he's fit, if he's healthy, if he's switched on and happy, there is something there. And while it was a disappointing year for Noel, we do have to have a look at that post All-Star period and go, oh, this is the guy we've known for all these years that can do this stuff in limited minutes. And it was pretty nice there, and I think a little bit underreported. Nemanja Bjelica had a fairly big rise. He became the 135th guy post All-Star. He played 31 minutes a game because Jimmy Butler was out. Of course, now he heads to Sacramento via a failed signing in Philadelphia. I think he's got a chance to be the starting three for Sacramento. Justin Jackson could also be in that mix, but I don't think that he is a good NBA player. So Bjelica, maybe he does get to 31 minutes again, but his ceiling is just so limited. He's not a high usage guy. He shoots the ball well. He hits threes, but he's not getting assists. He's not blocking shots. He can get steals. He can be fine for maybe a 16-team league, but even moving to Sacramento, I don't really think that there's any real huge upside there. The next bloke, pretty obvious here, Tomas Satoransky, went from 232 to 100. John Wall was out. He was killing it. And then Scott Brooks nonsensely went back to Ty Lawson in the playoffs over Tomas Satoransky as the backup point guard. Who knows what Satoransky's role is going to be for this upcoming season. The Wizards will have John Wall back fully healthy. Obviously, they haven't brought back Ty Lawson, but there are other players in that mix who could take minutes away from him, namely Austin Rivers, who came across in the Marcin Gortat trade. So as much as I love Satoransky, I really don't like his situation for this coming season. He could be a starting point guard in the NBA really easily and would be a comfortable top 100 sort of a player in 30-plus minutes. Unfortunately, that's just not going to happen this season. DeJounte Murray, 214th to 84th. That's real. That's what we're expecting for him for this coming season, except I think he gets a little bit of a usage bump. I think he probably gets a little bit of an efficiency bump. Hopefully he can dish out a few more assists. And that rebounding, the steals, the block numbers, they're all pretty solid. So that's fairly self-explanatory there for DeJounte. I talked about him in yesterday's show where I went over third-year players as well, and I was pretty interested to see what he was able to bring. Vanilla Tice of the Boston Celtics, he went from 249th to 123rd. He did only play 6 games post All-Star, but his value was sky high because his true shooting was at 74%, hitting 68 from the field and a block a game and almost a steal per game in those 18 minutes. Of course, the Celtics did bring in the rock DJ Robbie Williams. Rock DJ. There's there's Al Horford, there's Aaron Baines, plus there's the return of Gordon Hayward, which pushes these players up a position. So we'll see less of Horford playing the four, which probably is going to limit Tice this season. And I don't think a top 125 season is on the cards for him at all. Could be wrong, always. And he was very impressive. And I think that they, you know, we talk about them not having Hayward and not having Irving. Not having Tice last season was a, it was an impact, but I don't think it's going to be that level of impact. Kyle O'Quinn, another guy which I think you'd be surprised to see, was the 55th ranked player post All-Star break last season. Of course, there was no Kristaps Porzingis. After he tore his ACL, O'Quinn played only 22 minutes per night and averaged 9-8 with 2 blocks, 0.6 steals on 57-83 for a true shooting of 62%. But he heads to Indiana now, where he has to battle Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis for playing time at the center position. Maybe he still can get 21 minutes per night, but I think that we're going to see Turner get his 28-29, Sabonis split between the 4 and the 5, and it might be a little bit hard for the Cock Monster to get that level of playing time. But he's always been a guy that we know. Give him 25 minutes, he's a top 100 guy. That has always been the word on Kyle O'Quinn. Getting more minutes or getting consistent minutes has been a battle for him. I think he's a comfortable 16-team league guy this season, and he's going to have moments where he is a 12 and maybe even 10-team league. If Turner gets hurt, if Sabonis falls out of favor at the center position, they go with him exclusively as a four. If Thad Young gets traded and they insert Sabonis there, O'Quinn can do numerous things. He blocks shots, he gets steals, he's efficient from the field, from the line, he rebounds at a high rate. We just need those minutes to come in for the Cock Monster for that to really be effective. Let's look at another group of guys who improved significantly. Brando Ingram, I talked about him extensively yesterday. He went from 129th pre-All-Star to 30th post-All-Star. It's going to be hard for him to be able to do that this coming season with LeBron James in town.
LeBron James!
He needs to be able to do more than that, but he only played 6 games in that post-All-Star break period. And the reason he was so high is because he hit 56% from the field and 46% from three. But of course, it is on limited attempts. It's only on about 7 3-point attempts. And I think he hit, about 14 attempts, and he hit 6 threes in that time. So very low volume, but over 5 assists, almost 7 rebounds, over a block, 0.8 steals. Those assist numbers won't be able to maintain at that level. That shooting won't be able to maintain at that level. So I think that we'll find it hard for Ingram to get to that similar level that he had in that post All-Star period. Again, it's just such a small sample size. But I did want to highlight it because it does go into just reaffirming that he did improve over the second half of the season, and he did look good. But I do fear that that efficiency is going to drop back off. And even in that time frame, he was only shooting under 70% from the line. And the assist, if he goes from that mark that he was hitting there at 5.3 assists post All-Star down to under 4, he can't keep those blocks up at that level and the threes drop off again, then he's going to fall pretty precipitously from that 30 mark. And if he doesn't finish in the top 100 this season, I won't be surprised, and I don't think you should be either. Jabari Parker, he was returning from an ACL injury, so it's a little bit of an unfair thing there. He only played a couple of games pre-All-Star. He was okay post-All-Star. I'm not massively high on Jabari for this coming season. I do think he is going to be a standard league guy, probably a top 100 player, and maybe he does have top 50 upside. I don't fully believe in that. But the encouraging thing about what Jabari did last season was his efficiency was back, even though he was returning from that ACL injury. Jarrett Allen, for the Brooklyn Nets, he crept inside the top 100 post All-Star break last season. I've got high hopes for Jarrett for this coming season. He only played 24 minutes post All-Star, blocked over 2 shots per game, shot 60 and 78 as his 2 percentages, a true shooting of 65%, which is obviously very impressive. And I think he has got a big chance of being a top 50 player this season. I'll pretty much guarantee him as a top 100 guy, unless Kenny Atkinson decides to do dumb shit and run a lot of Ken Faried and Ed Davis at center, which I guess is a possibility. But Allen should be the guy they're developing. He should be pushing 25 to 26 minutes per night, getting those blocks, rebounding, bumping his usage, and keeping that efficiency at a high level. Johnny Isaac was also really strong post-All-Star. Of course, he didn't play a huge amount of games last season with recurring ankle injuries. But when he did come back, we saw the fantasy value that he brings. In those 12 games post-All-Star, he played 21 minutes a night, 2 steals and 1.3 blocks in only 21 minutes. Almost a 3 per game as well. Yeah, 35% shooting is pretty horrendous. But if he can get more minutes this season and push to 27 minutes a game, which I think he can, That's a top 100 player with those steals, with those blocks, with those threes. And if he ups his efficiency, starts hitting shots and getting rebounds and develops into the sort of dominant player I believe he can be, he's going to be a really good late round flyer pick for this upcoming season. The artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, we talked about him in yesterday's show quite a bit as well. He was excellent in that second half of the year, the 25th ranked player post All-Star, averaging 19, 5, and 3.5, over three threes per game, 1.3 steals, and a true shooting of 59%, including 41% from three. Now, we have to remember Dennis Schroeder was out for big chunks of that time. Kent Bazemore was dealing with a bone bruise, and he was out as well. And this team now does welcoming Trae Young and Jeremy Lin, and probably a bigger role for Johnny Collins, the Baptist, for this coming season. But there's no reason that Prince can't be a top 50 player this season. Probably has a chance to lead the team in scoring. I just think the assist numbers that he was able to accumulate when Schroeder was out is going to be unlikely for him to continue. With Trae Young, a prolific passer now in town and a ball dominant player, that's going to impact Taurean. But if he can up his efficiency and do a little bit of that secondary playmaking, at least take that role away from Bazemore, who was the secondary playmaker a lot of the time, yeah, Prince is a real top 50 threat. And I think that what we saw there was a good indication of what he could be, but I just wouldn't be expecting that high of a level. DJ Augustine, he was the 107th player post All-Star after the Magic traded away Lord Alfred Payton. That's an 83 spot rise. Of course, now he has to battle Jaren Grant. I think opinion is split on what the Magic are going to do, whether they're going to start Augustine or whether they're going to start Grant. I'm in the boat of them starting Jaren Grant. I think that with a team this young, there's no point starting a 30, 31-year-old journeyman point guard. And DJ is fine. He's solid. He's dependable. But let's see what you've got out of Jaren Grant, who showed, again, he could handle the ball fairly well last season and had a few moments. If DJ gets 30 minutes a night, he's a guy that you own. His upside is limited, but under the right circumstances, he could be a top 60 type of guy. Probably won't be, though. But it is interesting that he was able to be a solid rosterable player for all that period of the season where he was getting those 30 minutes per night. Spoke about Buddrick Hield yesterday. He was the 48th ranked player post All-Star, pre-All-Star 130th. We saw his usage go up, his minutes go up. The steal rate actually increased, even though it was elevated at the start of last season. He was getting his assist numbers up as well, almost three per game, 16 points. I think that Bud can have a similar season. I don't think he's going to start for the Kings, but I don't think he needs to. He'll play those backup minutes and should be a guy that if I had to make a guess at it at this point, I think he probably is their highest ranked fantasy player this season, assuming that those steals and assists, the gains he made there, can continue. Andre Iguodala took a big jump up. He went up 77 spots to 143rd post All-Star. Not much to see with Iguodala. He's going to be taking it pretty easy this season. But the last two guys on this list, Brooke Lopez, went up 73 spots to be the 75th ranked player. And Mario Hezonja, it's a me, he went up 73 spots as well to be the 114th ranked player. Lopez, I think, is bound to be back in the top 100 as he heads to Milwaukee to be that starting center there. He played 28 minutes per game post All-Star last year, averaged 15.5 points with 1.5 blocks. The free throw percentage was still weird, still 70%. I think that can go back up to the 80% he's been throughout his career. And that gives you probably another 10 to 15 ranking spots as well. And he should be knocking on the door of the top 50. While it's a me, Mario Hezonja, he was playing 27 minutes per night post All-Star with the Aaron Gordon and John Isaac injuries, averaged 11.5, 4, and 2 with 1.5 steals. Now he heads to the Knicks where he should be. I don't know that he necessarily would be, but he should be a starter either at the 3 or the 4 alongside the Fort Kevin Knox, at least until Kristaps Porzingis returns.
Porzingis.
I think that Hezonja is a top 100 guy for this coming season and probably higher in the first couple of months. Rebounds the ball well, can score, can hit threes. The efficiency has bounced back up. I'm really interested in what Mario is going to be able to do for this upcoming season. Let's have a look at the another bunch of guys. I'm just going to run through this list, highlight a few guys that I think are important. D'Angelo Russell, a 72 spot rise. I think he's big for this season. The Blue Swimmer. Kelly Olynyk, Rajon Rondo. Olynyk's a real interesting one there. Whiteside obviously was battling that knee injury at the end of last season. He's back, he's healthy, but Olynyk's their best center. Let's see exactly how Eric Spoelstra runs that. That's something to watch. Terry Rozier jumped up into the top 100 post All-Star. He's going to find it mighty difficult to get back to that spot. Marcus Smart was out, Kyrie Irving was out, so Rozier was just basically doing all the point guarding. It's not going to be the case this year.
As Greg runs in, we realise this could get dangerous.
Greggy Munro, he was an 89th ranked player post All-Star, but barely played. He was in and out of the lineup with the Celtics. Now with the Raptors, not much to see there. But another Celtics guy comes in next there at Jaylen Brown. He was able to improve his efficiency. I think his upside is limited, Jaylen, just by the holes in his game in terms of generating assists or being efficient. But that was a good step forward, and he could very easily be a top 100 guy this season. Baby Nick Wilson-Chandler, Reggie Bullock, Julius Randle and Kyle Kuzma all took big leaps forward. I'm really interested in Randle there, who was the 56th ranked player post All-Star. He should be getting close to that similar playing time in New Orleans, whether that's starting next to Anthony Davis or coming off the bench replacing Nikola Mirotic. He's going to get more minutes than he saw in the early portion of the season for the Lakers. And as I tweeted the other day, I think the Pelicans have a shot at having four top 50 fantasy guys. Tone Davis and Jrue Holiday are bang on there. And Mirotic and Randle, both of those guys, as I said, Randle was 56th post All-Star. I think Mirotic was 48th post All-Star last season. And so they've got a real chance of having that, which is weird considering three of those guys are big men. Nick Batum was 53rd post All-Star, dealt with the elbow issue at the start of the season and ramped it back up. I think another big season from Batum is coming and he could be a real draft steal. Joe Harris leapt up 48 spots to 130th, while Yusuf Nurkic got himself into the top 50, which is what we saw from him the previous season after he was traded to the Blazers from the Nuggets. I think that he's got a shot to get back to that level. I wouldn't be drafting him there, but he can get back there. Mick Beasley was 113th post All-Star, a nice 44-point rise, unlikely given his spot on the Lakers that he repeats that. Marcus Morris, 43 spot rise, no interest in him. Toby Harris was 29th post All-Star as a member of the Clippers. Yes, they're going to be welcoming back the Rooster, Patty Beverly as well, a couple of guys who weren't there last season, even Avery Bradley. So he might find it hard to get that level, but I'm pretty confident that Toby Harris is going to be a top 50 guy. Jim Johnson was the 69th ranked player.
Giggity!
Post All-Star. Interesting rise there. Dwight Howard got to 62. Dwight Powell got to 138th. Jermichael Green, 139th. And I'll just run through the rest of this list of guys who took rises of at least 20 spots post-All-Star. Ish Smith, Rick Rubio, Marcus Smart, Marco Bellinelli, the Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic, Isaiah Thomas, though he was coming from a fair way back. Jingle and Joe Ingles went from 70th to 42nd. He is a real sleeper sort of player. Punchbob Shiploke, Johnny Wall was the 6th player post-All-Star. Keep that in mind. He was poor at the start of the year, but did come home strong and was a guy who'd been a perennial player in that 10 to 12 mark. Farton Will Barton was the 37th ranked player post-All-Star. His role changes, and you know that I'm not quite as high on that this season. Bojan Bogdanovic, Will Cauley-Stein, Markeith, Caris LeVert, Bob Covington, Tyreek Evans, although he barely played post-All-Star, Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
JJ Barea, the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, and TJ Warren. All these guys saw jumps in rankings at least 20 spots after the All-Star break. Let's have a look at the flip side of guys who fell after the All-Star break. Malcolm Brogdon was 90th pre-All-Star, 346th post-All-Star. That's mainly because he was injured in that time frame and was easing himself back from that thigh injury. I'm not all that bullish on Brogdon. He's solid. He's efficient. He can get you assists, but he's not going to be the same sort of guy we saw in his rookie season because the role is different. He does have to battle an improving Sterling Brown, Tone Snell, Matty Dellavedova, who's healthy as well. So while I think he's solid, I think his upside's pretty limited. The Rooster, Danilo Gallinari, of course, injuries ruined at the end of his season. He struggled. I think he's a massive, massive sleeper and bounce-back candidate. Timothy John McConnell saw his role pretty much evaporate in that post-All-Star period. He went from 115th to 272nd. With all the return of Markelle Fultz, I think he's in trouble again this season. While Justin Holiday was a top 100 player before the break and then was 241st because his role evaporated once Zach LaVine returned. I think he's going to be in a similar boat, even though David Nwaba has gone. Holiday just won't find himself in that same role. Rocket Rodney Hood fell over 140 spots as well after he joined the Cleveland Cavaliers. He still hasn't signed anywhere. I imagine he's back in Cleveland and plays a larger role this season and might be worth a late round pick, but I do think someone like Chetty Osman is going to be a better option than Rocket this season, while Lord Alfred Payton fell from 57th as a member of the Magic to 199th as a member of the Phoenix Suns. He gets another opportunity now with the Pelicans where he should be the starting point guard with only really Ian Clark and Frank Jackson challenging him. And I don't mind him as a later round sort of a pick. Zebo went from 98th to 232nd. Sorry, Zedbo He fell 134 spots. Who knows what the hell Dave Yeager is going to do with him, but he did limit his minutes in that second half of the season. Will he continue that trend and give those minutes to Cauley-Stein, to Bagley, to Labissiere, to Giles? Or it will be more of the same of Zach Randolph jacking shots in 24 minutes per night and ruining everyone else? Reggie Jackson was 108th pre-All-Star, came back from the ankle injury and did struggle a bit. I think that 108th and even higher is a possibility for him this season under new coach Dwayne Casey. David West and Pau Gasol also fell. David West doesn't have a team and probably is going to retire, while Pau fell 114 spots, and I think he's a legitimate chance to lose a chunk of minutes to Jakob Poeltl this season for the San Antonio Spurs. Another bunch of guys, Dan Green went from 116th to 218th. I think he rises well back up this season in Toronto with that undiagnosed groin injury being healed and him being able to play more minutes. Trevor Ariza went from 69th
Giggity.
To 158th. I was down on Ariza most of last season. His efficiency dropped off. His steal rate dropped off. I'm not massively into him in Phoenix. I don't think he's all of a sudden going to become a high usage guy. And at the advanced age he's at, I wouldn't be shocked if his efficiency stays low and his steal rate stays low. Spencer Dinwiddie went from 80th to 164th. That was the return of D'Angelo Russell, which we saw on one of the earlier graphics, while Taj Gibson went from 76th to 152nd as well. He started off red hot with really high efficiency numbers, career high for efficiency numbers, and that tended to normalize. He's a low upside guy, I believe, who is solid, but more of a 14-team league guy. Jim Butler was 13th pre-All-Star, 88th post-All-Star as he was dealing with that MCL injury. Don't read too much into that. While Melo actually had a solid start to the year, 109th pre-All-Star, 181st after it. I think he's going to be a decent late-round pick this season. I think the hate on Melo has gone maybe a little bit too far. I think he can actually provide some value. Jordy Clarkson, much like Rocket Rodney Hood, suffered immensely with the trade, went from 147th to 217th with the Cavs. With the Cavs in flux, with Colin Sexton arriving there, J.R. Smith, Shedi Osman, Rocket Rodney Hood, a whole bunch of guys there who could be taking minutes from Clarkson. Let's be honest, he's just no good, and he's not a player that I'd be targeting. Al Horford suffered a lot, went from 38th to 106th. I wouldn't be caring too much about that. While Bazemore was the 61st best player pre-All-Star, 133rd post-All-Star. I would imagine that post-All-Star number is more likely to occur than the pre-All-Star number for this coming season. And let's round up today's show. Just a couple other guys who suffered significant dips after the All-Star break. Dario Saric went from 66th to 127th. I already talked about him in yesterday's show, how I am worried a little bit about what his production is going to be this season. And even in that post-All-Star period, when Fultz wasn't going in all those games, it was a significant fall. So just watch for that. Bogdan Bogdanovic dropped 59 spots. Wes Matthews, 58. He's another guy at big risk. Miles Turner went from 54th to 111th. It was just a disaster for him in that second half of the season. And while I think he can be a bounce back guy, he is not without risk. Aquinas and Sabonis could really take minutes away from him this season. Derek Favors went from 88th to 144th. The reason for that is in that pre-All-Star period, Rudy Gobert was out, so he was playing at center. Post-All-Star, he was back to power forward, a position which doesn't really suit him. It impacts his efficiency, it drops his blocks, it drops his rebounds, it also drops his playing time. So I would expect closer to that than the 88th we saw pre-All-Star. While Evan Fournier went from 65 to 119. His shooting dropped off and he also suffered a knee injury. Domantas Sabonis, for as good as he was, he suffered a fall as well, 128th to 180th. Some of the passing numbers, the efficiency numbers did dip from Domantas after a strong start to the season. And Lou Williams, who was killing it, 21st ranked player to post a pre-All-Star, went to 65th. As the Clippers started to get players back, Milos was back, Austin Rivers was back, Toby Harris arrived, and I think expecting the Lou Williams from 17-18 for this coming season is not what you should expect. There is a ton of guards there. Beverly returns, Avery Bradley's back at full health. You've got Lou, you've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, there's Jerome Robinson who probably won't play, Milos as well. I don't think that we're going to see that Lou Williams who was playing 35-36 a night and taking huge usage on high efficiency. There's going to be significant drops in his performances. Jeremy Lamb, Rudy Gay, Lauri Markkanen, they all dropped a lot. Markkanen's the interesting one. Outside the top 110 post All-Star, I think he can take a leap forward, but I reckon people are overrating Lauri a little bit. His lack of steals, lack of blocks are a concern. Now, I do think he plays more minutes for this coming season than what we saw last year, where he did struggle to get over 30 minutes per night. But I don't think that he's some lock top 30 sort of a player. I think top 60, top 50 is more realistic. The pencil Harrison Barnes was the 124th guy post All-Star. That's a fall of 37 spots. I don't love him as a fantasy guy. He always seems to have these second half dips. No steals, no blocks, no assists, low rebounds, and could be playing a little bit more at the four this season, but that remains to be seen. Dirk fell a lot. CJ McCollum was 80th post All-Star, which is pretty interesting to me that CJ did fall that far. His shooting was well off, 43% from the field, 34 from three, 78 from the line. Still, the steals and blocks were pretty low. Still averaged 20 points per game, but everything else fell there from CJ. Well, DeMar DeRozan was the 71st player post All-Star, 37th pre-All-Star. I think that DeMar DeRozan with the Spurs is going to be more like post-All-Star DeMar than pre-All-Star. That remains to be seen. Some people think he'll get better in San Antonio. I'm not one of those. Kelly Oubre, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, Az Gordon, Nick Vucevic, they all fell 31 or 32 spots. And then to round out this list, Enes Kanter, the Muppet John Henson, Klay Thompson, who was the 66th ranked player post-All-Star, even with Steph and KD missing time there. I think that Klay actually could fall outside the top 50 this season. It remains to be seen, but I wouldn't be shocked. Marvin Williams, JJ Redick, Hassan Whiteside, Etuan Moore, Serge Ibaka. I think Ibaka's going to be a bench player this year. Nick Mirotic fell actually 50th to 72nd, so actually I was wrong about his post-All-Star ranking. Drummond fell from 18th to 40th. That's the Blake Griffin effect. His assist numbers almost or pretty much cut in half post-All-Star, and that impacted him. Austin Rivers, Steve-O Adams, Paulie George, Tyler Johnson, Paulie Millsap, the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He went from 107th to 122nd. His upside is very, very low. Brad Beal, Chris Paul, Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
Thaddeus Young and Joel Embiid all fell at least 12 spots in the rankings post-All-Star break. That will do it. Now, this isn't an indication of what is going to happen this coming season, and that's why I tried to go through with a lot of these guys and provide context as to why these guys jumped up so much or fell down so much. But it is important to at least realize that what guys can do in a 20-25 game sample, what these changes can actually occur. And it's also important to realize that these 25 game samples can happen at any point. It might be December through to January. You might see that as a guy taking a big step forward or a big step back and then normalizing at other points during the season. Make sure you are following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. Follow Basketball Monster at @BaskMonster and the Locked On Podcast Network at Locked On NBA Net. And go leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on Apple. Subscribe on Google Play, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, on Spotify, and of course, YouTube. Smash subscribe. Give me a thumbs up. Share it. Tell your friends. Leave a comment. All that great stuff. It goes a long way to helping the show. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson.